It's a great pleasure to be here. Thanks, Paul, to Alan for that. Yeah, books are always forthcoming. So I haven't read in court for a couple of years. I was down here at Pine Colors thing just a few years ago. So I'm just going to do a trawl through the various books and start with The Interior Act, which came out a few years ago. And with the final part of the final part, the Xavier poems. Xavier is the kind of alter ego, alter persona, and it's quasi-autobiographical. The first poem is called I Was Born, the echo of the five word poems. I was born on a blue day. I was born on a blue day, while father sat with an ash rod astride the sea, thinking of his sunflower harvest as the season's first surge of mackerel thrashed after whitebait. My memory is like an accretion of cobalt grains, a ball seized in my head and bowled along blue tarmac, rolled to shore, washed out in the sea-curled surf, a leaded weight cast back in my father's eye, blinding him to the truth about himself and me. We are brothers, I realize that now. Blue-eyed gardeners, archaeologists of the air, accordionists of water. I trust him, and trust him as a guide. Now that he is dead, he remembers my life. He arrives, and I await him. He hovers over me, and remembers being born on a blue day, a mackerel sky. His father playing sweetly to a distant woman, leaning through a blue window, dreaming a life to fill a space. He kneels, my father's father. I kneel and pool a panful of mirroring water, casting my image home to the sea, my music to a spell of time. Next poem, I'll read a few from that kind of relate to the area that I've lived in for 20 years, the Burn. For many years I've lived on a flaggy shore, and it's kind of exposed limestone flags with fossils and cross-sections of seaweed and so forth. Keeney has a lovely poem on it called Postscript. This is the flaggy shore. I've walked the flaggy shore 1,000 times, 10,000 times, infinitesimally eroding fossilized crustaceans, clusters of calcified weed, delicate evidences lost in time. I lick the salt stone and whisper to its eerie space, words it will carry more or less as it carries the memory of waves, imperturbably. I release my words and touch, as stone releases the soft, memoried lives of mollusks and wrinkles. Millions of generations fluent in this rock, in its inanimate memory. Does space hold such companionable eternities? And will we find there is a time in space, and space in time, replete in memory of what was and is? There's another poem my father kind of crops up in this again, and it's an analogy to him. And for years, you know, I didn't have a phone when I was living on the lakeshore. I used to go down to the local harbour, just about a mile down the road, and they had one of those old telephone kiosks, you know, the blue and kind of green kiosk. And I was doing reviews for the Times that day, so that was my only phone connection. But I got the news about my father's final illness there. This one is called Death, the Invisible Accomplishment. From within a cream ultramarine kiosk overlooking Auchinish Island, I saw the water between shore and shore churn and dark. The sky bleed greyly, the land winter its mortal green. The black mouthpiece, like a dark body part, bobbed in the slim chamber, echoing my mother's whispered words, news is bad. The deep scan of my father's body had pictured lesions on his stomach wall, shoals of growth which devoured his appetite and fed death dreams. My eyes crawled out to sea through middle currents and on charges banks, to seals on the misting rock of Deer Island, to boats in the carriage of a wish, to the tidal sea taking an offering. On the storm road by the flaggy shore, I walked in witness to your end, loosening the line linked to your migrating self. On the shores of Loch Muirle, a swan for each of your years clusters the terrible blue water. There's sometimes whirring wings, a chorus to your vanishing. Through the pores of soft stone walls, the south wind blew, inordinate and warm. High over Blackhead, a sudden cloud swell broke. A page of rain fell seaward, shedding the memory of a life inscribed upon a filamental sheet, decoded to the sea, subsumed in the eternal afternoon. Films, and there's an old painter friend of mine, Hazel Walker, who paints extraordinarily kind of metaphorical and evocative and eerie little paintings of trees in odd relationships with each other in snow landscapes and houses in the sea and beehives in deserts. And I used a group of her paintings as a platform for the construction of a kind of poetic narrative. So these will probably appear in the next book. It's called Poems for Christina, and about five poems in it. Of northern light and lonesome trees, a heartache of tragic true green trees, soft paths leading nowhere. Nowhere station, like elsewhere station, is bruised with black flowers and resin dark trees, and girls in print dresses falling from joy, tapping at the bloods until they stop. Trains to come, trains to go, snow paths to the heartland. I remember trains, windows, reflections, clicking through the chicle iron night, acres of blue light, acres of blue trees. I have a memory of her hand taken and kissed in a small wood hut, and of her falling with my body inside her, calling her elsewhere note, seeking the true echo of her cry, seeking herself in the forests of the world, knowing no note but elsewhere always, until she was lost to me, somewhere in the stations of the world, a drear effusion of northern light, a heartache of tragic true green trees, a soft path leading nowhere. It was a forest once. It was a forest once, 10 miles or so from town. We went there to tie ribbons on the dead lower branches of pines. We held hands on the train, the small pads of her palms sweated. We didn't speak but looked at the white sun rise. I imagined losses for her and pain. I looked at her knees, small white scars, a pale rose blemish on her furthest calf, the curved plastic feet splaying her thighs, I saw a future in her hauntedness. She seemed then like a signal expression of a terror the world would grow into, a small expression of beauty and conscious pain. In the forest, we took the ribbons cut from a blue camisole her mother had worn, and with each binding, she asked me to repeat, evil knows no bounds, nor goodness. We ate dry sandwiches in a field of dense grass, and returned by train at evening to our lives. It will be taken away. What has been given will be taken away. This our womb room space, this our place of molar darkness and grinding covert action. This the place where once we spilled water, wiped blood from the floor, kept company with misery, and could not forget that something unmistakable lay in least earth by a forest tree. In the second wave of panic, I knew she was by the window, deserted by what was missing of herself. She fell into a flower pattern of thoughts that she would winter again, thoughts that she might retrieve what had been taken away, not knowing then that the thing that had been lost would stay lost, and what had been taken from her would never be returned. We met again and again. We met again and again. Photographs prove it. Stations in Barong, Palatou, Tavant. Meet me, she would text, 3 days from now, dress in white, no socks. Over the years, I learned to drop everything, sickness to evade work, trips to betray a lover, our final destinations always reachable by train. Sometimes she would be waiting for me, sometimes I would be waiting for her. Years might pass, and then a call. She was always recognizable, the shape of her head, her standing posture, her disdain for the conventions of the world. They merge to the stations of the world. A cold stone annex, a vaulted arch, glass and oxidized red tiles, men in blue serge uniforms, she coming towards me in the early morning, the train track snaking towards the bleak corner, she taking my hand, the light electric for a moment. There is an eloquence to the loss you cannot name, a kind of frailty that instills allegiance, breath requiring breath, needs that need to feast, need as oblique gift, touch as total substance. In the green shuttered room, she whisked the walls to stunning flowers, and breasted the blue window's filmic light, pressed my soul to her belly, bathed my feet, sexed until her body blurred, talked until her talk became as natural as breath, and our past was not reconfigured with the present. Dwarig, I saw her for the last time. Dwarig, a remote place without trees or mountains or cold. She picked a flower, a swollen red dahlia, and plucked it to its core as we talked. The petals lay at her feet and then she walked. The odd abstract recalled the clots of blood we had cleansed the floor of. A pattern of blood from a life whose loss demarked an end we never truly named. On an open plain. I imagine a house on an open plain. Dark house on a plain of grass. I imagine she is there, holding a womb burst of bees, her flower dress stained with nectar. There is a light inside. That was always what she wanted. The light inside is something she could hold. The light outside, fading to a sea black. She sits quietly, rocking into her life, waiting for the sea to come. She can hear it in the distance, growing over grass, surmounting flowers, overwhelming stones, submerging fuchsias. Lift lifting her little head, her beautiful high, lifting her little head, her beautiful high, surrender. She can no longer flee. Her memories of the forest. She would go there now, but she can only go to the place where she is taken. The sea, the womb, the station, the shore, chambers and encasements, life disgorged and engrossed, the shore faintly imagined and forgotten, the sea falling into her, the sea carrying her. The sea carrying her in a way the land never did, nor I.
Alone.
there are other bodies within our own eternity. We contain the loved in evident and semi-immortal states. We are also contained. I am elsewhere held by love in excess states. I am them and they are me. Templates to my own field impressed upon my soul. I roam old loves, fervent and instilled. I call upon them all. In waking dreams, in meditations, in recollections, in sleepless rotations, in the seas between us, in the ribbons of time which interweave our memories, in the calling and in the revelation, making of our souls believers in the body. Southward, that there was a review of the last book, The Daily Accord, by Billy Randall, which Paul was saying. Comes here.
He does usually, yeah. He's in Belmont tonight. He's in Rome.
It's an odd book because it was written over about a 20-month period, and I wrote a number of three-line poems, kind of haiku or senrai based, but not maintaining the kind of traditional unities of those forms necessarily. I did it for about 20 months and then edited the sequence down. Inevitably, you know, the kind of narrative lines, the characters that crop up and forth throughout the book. I had done daily drawings as well. So when the book was launched, I had three voices, and we did variations, and then just inverted poems and I read it that way, and there were projected images and there was a music soundtrack. But just to give you a flavor of it, I'll read a few of them, and I'll just read a few, and I'll give you two versions. What is interesting to do, because there are a few other things aside from the pollution that you do on a daily basis, isn't it? The most casual of days, constructing the template of memory, the bath water overflowing. The bath water overflowing, the most casual of days, constructing the template of memory. Scent of fresh lemon balm on my fingers, rose nettle tips at my feet, comfort and unity of striving things. The comfort and unity of striving things, scent of fresh lemon balm on my fingers, rose nettle tips at my feet. Lake water lightning, oh my completing life. My completing life, oh lake water lightning. Bell thought to throng the funeral spine, remorseless river, remorseless river, bell thought to strong funeral spine. Light forms from our dead, we remove to a leafless world transparently. Transparently, light forms from our dead, we remove to a leafless world. Slip into this life, river, death. Always fall to your deepest. Always fall to your deepest kiss. Slip into this life, river, death. We drive westward into the swollen land. Our dreams behind us. Our dreams behind us. We drive westward into the swollen land. Some lives never rise. The mind illuminates no anchoring space. No anchoring space. Some lives never rise. To start with understanding the predicate of love, the desire to imagine an end. The desire to imagine an end. To start with understanding the predicate of love. And we sit to each other's eyes bleeding as the light degrades. As the light degrades, we sit to each other's eyes bleeding. In a love that does not fully contain us, undelivered by the graciousness of being, Daylight takes on an indifferent sureness. Daylight takes on an indifferent sureness in a love that does not fully contain us and deliver us by the graciousness of the day. Years of deep intent, constructing patterns, something to penetrate later. Something to penetrate later. Years of deep intent, constructing patterns. Anyway, good on that. They do have a kind of elegiac tone, but that's not just my tone. Well, I'll end with two pieces. For years, by 17 years, my mother had Parkinson's, and slow, inexorable decline, and. Four of us, and we used to take it in turn to take care of her at weekends. So it became a really integral rhythm in my life. So this is a poem to her about her called Damaged Dome. I asked myself how she names what she hears, whether she credits what she sees as real, whether the voices are ordained, whether it will stop, whether silence will detain her. This is where the damage is done, she says, as though there is a place where the spirit thins and the body is purely body in decline, a place where you fall. A place where essential fragments of the self are deeply lost. A place or space where you derange, where you know and do not know the truth. I never thought it would be this difficult to die. She both fears what she hears and hears what she fears. Some frailties are inexhaustible. I touch her skin, I trace her spine, I comb her hair, I clip her nails. More than memory, more than speech, the body embeds each touch, a comb to contain a fundament of love. Perhaps all you have is the knowledge that you are touchable to the end. The touch remains the first and last resort for growth. She knows that when the night comes, she will wake and hear jazz and big band music and regional ballads swarm in the room. She is a hive for random things to intrude and drone and dement her. She is a hive gone haywire. Complete dreams become a total reality. Her distant brother comes to town, retrieves the letter that must not be opened, throws it into a room with two beds which they later occupy, but in the morning there are no clothes, no sign of occupancy, no letter, no brother. She knows the tension of sanity is only barely sustained. Realities supplant one another. Time becomes as sinuous as a collocation in memory. Damage is done daybreak by daybreak. Above the laurel and firs, her eyes are drawn over the suburbs to the eastward sea. A stretch of sand, the solace of memory, grace of the body in motion, and the defended life evading the eternal. Last poem I'll read is Rectification, and when she died, she came back to the house that they'd, it looked like she'd been in a wind tunnel, that combed her hair oddly and they glued her lips together, and so began a process of rectification. How many curlers for her dead hair? How much Chanel for her dead load? How much lipstick for her dead lips? How deep to sever the vein she said she wanted cut? How to mend her? How to hold her? How to leave her? How to remember her bones? How it ends? How her cold skin softens? How shallow is Libby's? Not to have collected her nail fairings, not to have watched less sports, not to have explained the rules of fame and fortune or death in life, not to have boiled the ham more slowly, not to have made more of an effort in ways that might have glossed our final time. We went that afternoon on our final Sunday drive down Griffith Avenue, the wind cherry blossom thick, the sun ideal, along by Clontarf, the new apartments noted, and over the wooden bridge, same sound as in the 60s, when we pitter-cattered over it in our yellow VW. She remarked on the birds, on the clarity of Pope's head in the driven wind, on the clouds like a froth of egg-white frittering. We parked where we had parked a generation ago. The sea pulled back, the sand skittering south. I left her in the car and walked forward in front of her, over the crenellated ebb sand, and walked back to her, as I had always walked back to her. We were made for each other, made for the care of each other, in ways we could not have predicted. We'll head back now, I said, unless you'd like to go further. But she had gone far enough. There was nothing more she needed to see. On our way back to the bridge, she noted a coastal house. I never remember that being there, she said, but it had always been there, as long as I could remember, just as she will always be there, as long as I remember how many curlers